Accession number 27302, real one.
When and where were you born, Mr. Dobbs?
I was born on the 7th of November 1916 in a little village called Beaufort, 1 mile from Aberfeil in South Wales.
What did your father do for a living?
My father worked in the pits.
Did your mother work?
Pardon?
Did your mother work?
No. I am the youngest of nine, a family of nine. There were five boys and four girls. And my dad died of silicosis, that's like pit dust. And I was only 11 years old when both my parents had died. I lost a sister and the two parents within 15 months of each other. I was left to be brought up with my sister, who was just 4 years older than me, so she was only 15 when she had to look after me. And I had a bachelor brother, and they both brought me up.
Who was become then the wage earner in the family? Who was?
Well, my brother worked in the pit too.
So he was earning.
He was the wage earner then. Yes.
It must have been a pretty hard time.
It was, yes. Because all the rest of my family were married off, you see. And that's what happened. I was just left there with my sister and brother to look after me and bring me up.
What was the neighbourhood like that you lived in?
Well, it was very good, very close-knit community. And, of course, the pit valleys, as they were referred to in those days, a very close community, because they nearly all worked in the pits works. And incidentally, when I left school, the first job I had was in the brickworks. So, but it wasn't a full-time job. It was just as the orders came in for particular bricks, then I was employed for maybe 10 or 12 weeks at a time.
Growing up as a child?
Yes.
What kind of activities did a small child get up to in South Wales?
Well, there wasn't very much to do in those days. Apart from the usual fun and games that the youngsters have when they leave school, there was no sports facilities like there is of today. We had to make our own sport, more or less, playing cricket or football or whatever.
And the families would be, as you say, pretty close?
Yes.
Good neighbours?
Yes, quite good, yes.
What was the first school you went to?
Elementary school, yes. It was at Beaufort Hill School, it was called. It was just for boys. The girls had their own school in those days. They weren't mixed like they are today.
Have you got memories of school life?
Vaguely. It's a long time ago.
Did you like school? Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
And the kind of education you got, was it good?
Well, reasonably good, yes. But I think that I've done better since I've left school with being concerned with the army and several things. It's educated me more, I would think.
What was your favourite subject?
At school? Oh dear, I can't remember. I wasn't brilliant in any one, I may add.
Does any school teacher stand out in your mind as having a particular influence on your life?
Not that I'm aware of.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
Did you find work immediately?
No. That was what they called the slump area, slump period. Work was very hard to find in those days.
And this must have affected everyone around
you? Yes, yes. I mean, there was large dole queues in those days.
Were the miners on strike at this period of time?
There was a period when they were on strike, but that was about 1926, I believe, the general strike. I can barely remember that, because I was young at that. I mean, I was only born in 1916.
Had your father served in the First World War?
No, he was in the pit, yes.
And what were you doing for the first month after school?
Oh, nothing. There was no work to be found in those days.
When you got a job, where did you start? What was your work?
I started at the local brickworks. I worked for a contractor delivering the shale to make the bricks. My job was to drive a horse pulling three trams from the tips, what we called, where the shale was dug out. They were about a quarter of a mile away from the brickworks. And my job was 12 journeys every day, fetching these journeys of trams back and forth from the shale tips to the brickworks.
What was your wage, your first wage?
£1.18.
What were your hours of work?
From half past 6 in the morning until 5 at night.
And that was, did that include Saturday?
No, Saturday we finished at half past 12.
And Sunday off?
Sunday off, yes.
Was it heavy manual work?
Well, I mean, I was driving the horse, but the people who had to shovel the shale into the skips, into these three trams, well, they worked pretty hard in all weathers. If you were rained off, you lost your money for that.
Did you hand your money over to your brother?
To my sister.
Your sister.
Yes, she was more or less the housekeeper, yes.
She must have been a remarkable young lady.
Yes, she did very well, considering she was only 4 years older than me. She's still alive today, and she's 92.
The conditions at home, what was the house? Could you describe the house you lived in?
It was a three-bedroom house, but it was outside toilet. In those days, inside toilets were a luxury. Only the rich could afford them, I would imagine.
And that was earthenware toilet or water?
It was water toilet, yes.
And how many of you, was your sister looking after at this point in time? Were you just,
well,
you're the youngest, everybody else was out at work?
Oh,
or
yes.
Whatever, yeah.
After my mom died, she was the last one to die, like. There was just my older brother, he was about 20 years older than me. He was a single man, he remained single all his life. And my sister. So they were the two who brought me up.
Were you relatively comfortable?
Oh, yes, we managed. I mean, we had no luxuries in those days, but you had to manage as best as you could.
Was your sister cooking for you? Was cleaning,
yes,
everything,
yes,
else?
Yes.
She devoted her life to bringing you
she
up?
She did, yes. She sacrificed a lot of her life to look after me because I was so young.
Did the church or chapel play
a
role?
Chapel, yes.
And how often? Was that every Sunday?
Oh, yes, every Sunday. And, of course, you had to put on your best suit for that day. As soon as you got back home, you changed back into your old togs to run around in.
Was there any church organisations or chapel organisations that you joined?
No.
Boy Scouts? Or?
No, I didn't, no. There was Boy Scouts on the go, but I didn't join them. Didn't have the inkling for it in those days, I suppose.
What about discipline? Was your sister firm with you?
Well, I was always brought up to do right, you know.
Which was a sign of the times. That was the way people were.
Oh, yes.
As a teenage boy, what kind of leisure activities did you have?
Well, if we were lucky, we could go to the pictures once a week, maybe on a Saturday. And for 6 months in those days, you could go to the pictures and you could have a fish and chips on the way back home. And you still had a penny left in your pocket. because the pictures were about tuppence, fish and chips was threepence, tuppence for the fish and a penny for the chips. And then you had a penny left. Maybe you could buy a bar of chocolate for that.
And did your sister give you pocket money?
Yes. That was before I was working, you see, yes.
That was from your brother's earnings?
Yes.
And I think you said he worked down the pit as well. Is that
yes, all my family worked down the pit.
Yeah. Were they well paid?
No. I think the average wage was about £2.5 in those days for an adult.
Was it a pit house that you lived in?
No. My dad bought the house. Yes, before I was born.
So that would be a good part of your life, having your own house.
Yes.
When you were in work and so on, did you get an annual holiday?
If we had any time off, we never got paid for it in those days. Like some Easter Monday or anything like that. You didn't get paid for it. You had already.
So Christmas and bank
holidays. The job closed down, but you didn't get paid.
So Christmas and bank holidays, you'd get the days off, but you didn't get paid for
that's
them.
Right,
because you went to work.
That's right.
So how long were you with this company?
Well, as I said before, you just worked in short periods. Maybe 3 months, and then you'd be laid off for maybe 6 months. Well, I put up with that for about 3 years, and then I decided to go to Southend-on-Sea to work, to look for a job. I got a job there, first of all, with Shells of Nottingham. They were building a new cinema, so I got a job there. And when the cinema was finished, I worked for Wimpy's, putting underground telephone cables along the pavement along South End Front. Very good, the people were very good down there. They used to come out with mugs of tea and biscuits when they saw us slogging away, digging these trenches. Of course, there was no mechanical diggers in those days. It was all pick and shovel work.
Where did you live?
I was in digs, yes.
Why did you choose South End?
Well, I had a friend who worked down there. And when he came home on holiday, I met up with him, and he said, if you can't get any work here, come down to South End, you'll probably get a job there. So I saved up a few weeks to get enough train fare, and that's where I landed.
And what happened to you, to your wage there? Did that go back to your sister?
Yes, whenever I could afford to send money back, I did, yes. But even then, the wages wasn't very good there, you see. It was throughout the country, I would think, with the standard of the wages sort of thing.
And the working conditions must have been pretty bleak at times.
Oh, yes.
So you've got the sea, isn't it? It's at the seaside, south of
the seaside.
So you've got the sea weather.
Yeah, nice place, yeah.
And you would work during the heavy rain or whatever the weather was?
Well, yes. As I say, we worked outside digging these trenches along the pavements and that. And if you had any time off, well, you didn't get paid. If you were rained off or anything.
So that must have been difficult if you had to pay for your digs.
Well, that was it, you see. I had a very good understanding landlady who, if I couldn't pay the full boarding, shall I say, she would say, well, pay me when you can. And I used to cover up a little bit each week until I could clear the debt off.
How did you spend your leisure time there when you weren't working?
Well, with it being a seaside place, it was nice to go down along the seafront and that.
How old were you at this point in time?
I was about 18 then.
So a teenage lad away from home,
there, I stayed there for about 3 years. And then the war broke out. I was there in 1939. So when war broke out, I decided to come home to South Wales and join the South Wales Borderers.
Before we come to that, were you aware that there were problems brewing on the continent?
Well, yes, because, I mean, the local papers were full of what was happening, and everybody knew more or less what was happening, what was going to happen. And previous to the war breaking out, one of my jobs was sandbags for protection against that landing. Because South End had a war, the scars on some of the buildings, the old buildings, from the shells that had exploded.
So with the conditions deteriorating, they were always already preparing for this kind of thing happening.
Yes. Yeah, they knew things were very serious.
You went home, you said, and you joined the South Wales Borders.
Yes.
Now, what was the process of joining?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was conscripted. When I say I joined, I was conscripted. They started off calling the men from the age of 18. But at that time, I was 23, coming up to 23. And that's when they sent a letter telling me to add a report to the medical officer at Newport for a medical to confirm if I was fit enough for active service. So I've passed the test, and within about another 3 weeks I got a letter to say that, at first they asked me what section of the services I wanted to be in. I said I would like to be in the Welsh Guards. And when the medical officer checked my height, he said, I'm afraid you're 1 inch too short, because they were strict on height in those days for the guards. So I said, well, any Welsh regiment? He said, well, we'll notify you. So when the letter eventually came out 3 weeks later, they told me I was to go to the South Wales Borders at Brecon. That was the depot.
What date was this?
This was the date I actually joined up, was the 15th of March, 1940.
So by that time, there had been disasters with Dunkirk.
Oh, yes, yes. As a matter of fact, when we were stationed in Brecon, we were moved out of the barracks so that the survivors of the Dunkirk evacuation, some of them came to take over the barracks in Brecon because there was no accommodation for them. So we were sent to a camp nearby, about 3 miles out of Brecon, to a place called Derryn Lines. It was a camp made for the troops, all this and that sort of thing. And that's where we went when the Dunkirk men came into the Brecon.
What was the kind of the opinion of people when the Dunkirk episode was happening? Was there a defeatism in the air?
Well, they were all concerned. They thought that Germans were far too strong for us. Well, in those days, we were not prepared like the Germans were, because they'd been preparing for about 4 years for war, whereas this country wasn't. They were real prepared.
So you felt that, or people felt that, given more weapons and what have you, that you could turn the tables?
Well, that's true, yes, yes. But we didn't know where we were going to get these extra weapons from, I would think, in those days. I mean, it wasn't our job, and we left it to the government, more or less, to sort these things out, these problems.
So when you turned up at your barracks in Brecon on the very first day, how were you received?
Well, at first we were met at the station by an army sergeant. He marched us through the town. Well, it wasn't marched, we just walked through, because we hadn't been trained to march in those days. We went to the depot, and he showed us our barrack room, which was three boards, just about 6 inches high off the ground, and that was our beds. He said, right, lads, choose your bed, and then we'll go along and get you signed on. So we put our kit on the beds that we chose. We went along to the recruiting officer, and had to sign on and everything else. From there, we went to another MO and got another medical check. And this went on and on very often, you know, MO parades and that. But, and from the MO, we went to the storekeeper where we issued the uniforms.
How was this done?
Then,
how was this done? How did you actually receive the uniform?
Well, he asked you what size boots you took, for example. And he would weigh you up and he would say, well, I think that uniform will fit you. And he got into it. He struggled into it.
That was just by looking at you? There was no measurements on?
Well, he'd handled so many men, he could see at a glance, really, what size uniform you took.
And was it a good fit?
It wasn't bad.
What were you issued with?
Well, we had khaki trousers and a khaki blouse, that they called, with some name. So,
and was it just one set?
That was a standard fit in those days.
And was it just one set of these?
No, we had two sets of uniform. One was a best uniform. And then we also had a fatigue uniform, which was made of denim for doing dirty work sort of thing, digging trenches and that. But we always had to keep our uniform smart for parade duties.
And what else were you issued with, other than the battle dress?
Well, we had our rifles and bayonets the following day.
Did you have underwear and
clothes? Oh, yes,
and was
yes.
Two of everything again?
We had two of everything, underwear and that, and a scarf and a greatcoat, hat, a beret in those days.
Boots?
Yes, boots, yes.
And they would be the old leather?
They were the old type with studded bottoms, you know, and steel toe cups and heel plates. They were very heavy. I've seen some of the lads who'd never wore heavy boots before with their feet bleeding wearing them on a route march. I've seen the blood coming through the lace holes. They just couldn't stand them.
And you'd be used to them because you'd worn them?
Well, yes, I was used to heavy boots because, through working in the brickworks.
And you were saying that you were given rifle, bayonet?
Yes.
What was the rifle?
It was a Lee Enfield. It was the First World War rifle. Fired 303 rounds.
And cleaning it, how did you keep it clean?
Oh, yes, we had to keep polished more or less, with dust of the woodwork, the butt that they call, or the stock. And the barrel, we had what they call a pull-through, which was a piece of cotton wool with a weight attached to it, and about a yard of string, which you drop down the barrel. And this cotton wool was oiled, so that you pull it back and forth, oiling the barrel, and kept it nice and clean. That was where you kept your barrel of the rifle clean.
And presumably this would be inspected regularly because...
Oh, yes. You would on parade nearly every day, you know, after you got your initial training sort of thing.
What else did they issue with on that very first occasion?
Well, it's just to remember an awful lot easier.
Did you get your packs?
You had your equipment, yes. And your mess tins and water bottles.
Knife, fork and spoon.
Oh, yes, you would, yeah. What they called... I'm trying to think now. It was like a canvas wallet. And inside was knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, toothbrush, lather brush, button stick and button brush. They were in, and you could wrap them all up, you see. And we also had what they call a housewife. Every soldier had a housewife, which was a little white cotton bag, and there was a reel of cotton in there, some needles, some wool to darn your socks with, that sort of thing.
So you're well prepared.
That was your housewife.
The barrack room, can you describe it?
Well, it was a building attached to the barracks. And as I said, the beds were just three planks on little wooden legs, about 6 inches off the ground. The funny thing was, when we chose our beds, the sergeant said, right, we'll go and collect some biscuits. So one lad said, I'm bloody glad of that. He said, I'm hungry. But those biscuits turned out to be three mattresses which put side by side that formed your bed to lay on. And then one lad said, what about some pillows? The sergeant looked at me, pillows? You've come from the army, not bloody butlins. So for our pillow, we had to use our kit bag, take all the hard stuff out, like boots and that, and just leave your clothing inside, and that was your pillow.
And what for, about blankets and sheets?
Yes, we had, although no sheets, no sheets. That's what happened when the fella said, what about pillows and sheets? That's when the sergeant said, this isn't bloody butlins. So, and as regards blankets, we had three. One to lay on your mattress, and the other two was to cover you. That was your bedding.
Where did you keep your clothing? And
well, if you were lucky, in some of the barrack rooms they had like lockers where you could put your personal stuff. But as regards your equipment and your blankets, they all had to be folded up very neat and placed at the head of the bed, with your greatcoat on the top of the blankets, and then your equipment around. It all had to be in uniform fashion right throughout the hut.
This would be kit inspection?
Kit inspection, yes.
And how often did you get a kit inspection?
Well, we had kit inspection. They were once a fortnight, I would imagine. Usually on a Saturday, before we went on route march. And of course, they were so fussy that some of the lads used to start to lay the kit out the night before, and they would sleep on the floor other than to disturb the kit on the bed, because everything had to be in a regimental form. Even your spare boots had to be polished underneath and that sort of thing, you know.
Did you have to polish the studs?
Oh, yes, you had to. Oh, there wouldn't be a speck of dirt on the soles of your boots.
And this was laid out in a special pattern on the
yes,
bed?
Yes, yes, you had your boots at the bottom of the bed, and you had your PT shoes, canvas shoes, they were there.
Who did the inspections?
Well, usually the sergeant major. Yes.